Anyway, hey, welcome back to the JK Moto Podcast. This is a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider. We specialize in track riding, club racing, and graded entertainment. We truly do it all. I missed part of that because we are coming to you this week from not Stable B.
Not the rolling stable.
Where are we at, Cole?
Home.
Home for you, otherwise known as the compound, up here in Utah. Part of the reason why tonight's episode is the way that it is because I just traveled cross country to get here. We're gonna be doing a track day, maybe a little bit of racing here coming up. So don't expect this one to be super long, but we'll get some good info out there, I think. Have some good motorcycle chat.
I have one. If that was me saying what you were just saying, I would have said it just a little differently.
Okay, well, what you got?
I would have said, there's gonna be a hell of a lot of racing and there might be a track day a little bit in there somewhere.
Well, that's the difference. Yeah, yeah. There will be a lot of racing. There's 2 days of racing and 1 day of track day, but that's what we're here for down at UMC. I don't know.
UMC East?
Yeah, the East track. We'll get more into that in a little bit. I think we should roll the intro and get started on this episode.
I'm Cole, by the way. And who are you?
I completely forgot about that part.
Yeah.
We don't even need to introduce ourselves. Hang on.
Just roll the intro.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sixth.
We're back. We're still at the compound. And I forgot to mention beforehand, which is why we're kind of laughing, that this week's episode is brought to you once again by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah that we may or may not be at right now.
Yeah.
And you can ask any other questions that you have on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast, back for its regular weekly programming.
Yeah, see? You see what it does to a man to drive 4.5 days?
Yeah, I think we're on the road for 5, but really just about 4.5 of actual driving. It's a lot. You know, I tell you what, though, Rolling Studio Stable, as I like to call it, bring these bad girls with us anywhere you want. It's pretty sweet. I don't recommend it for most people's pocketbooks or my own, but we keep doing it anyway, and we enjoy it, so nothing wrong with that.
That segment brought to you by American Express.
Yeah. Visa, American Express, whatever bank. Well, speaking of pocketbooks, you know, part of my getting here and whatnot, you know, is always going through the checklist before I hit the road. And I tell you what, when you're traveling literally cross country, this isn't the first time that I've done it. Definitely not the first time. You're not traveling this time, but you've done that before yourself. We've been down to Cali, Washington, Arizona, across the other side of the country. Sometimes you're flying and just hoping the bike there is ready to go. Sometimes it's not. You know, and you pack all your stuff in a trailer and you hope you got everything and you go. And there are some videos out on the channel about that, but we're kind of gonna maybe dig into that a little more and also dig into the other side of the pocketbook, which is a topic called Race Mayhem Recovery, RMR.
Race Mayhem Recovery.
Yeah.
RMR.
Yeah, the RMR portion topic.
I don't wanna go there.
No one wants to go there, but I think it's something that, it's the worst part of this sport. It's the worst part of, honestly, anything, but it happens. We got to talk about it.
It's just part of the deal.
Well, and that's what it takes to come back. Come back next week, be ready to go, come back strong. I did notice you got 2 bikes over there. Does that have anything to do with this RMR stuff, or what have you to say on that topic, Cole?
Since you went there,
uh-huh.
RMR, Race Mayhem Recovery, note to self. I need to write that down.
Marked.
One of the things I've learned going through this, which I have a lot of respect for people, is longtime listeners of the channel know this is really my... I raced a bit last year, but this is really my first hardcore. We're not going to miss a round. We're going to do everything we can to get to every round.
First real season, maybe?
Yeah. And looking at it that way, there's a whole new respect level for people that can make it to every round. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of commitments. There's a time commitment, of course.
Absolutely. Let's break that down. Before we dig into the other commitments, let's break that down because, you think about racing, it's generally on a weekend because most people aren't working on the weekends. And most people that are doing club racing have day jobs. We don't really make money doing that. In fact, I think most people spend a lot of money doing it. I've mentioned that before. But the time commitment, is it really just Saturday, Sunday? Or how much of your week do you see yourself actually putting into the upcoming races or just keeping everything going throughout the season?
I would say that's a spectrum.
Okay.
I would say that's a spectrum. And the reason I say that is because depending on how much it is consuming your life and different people handle things differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there might be one guy that's not thinking about it until Friday when he gets off work and he's like, no, bike's still in the trailer from last week, let's go.
The procrastinator.
And maybe it's not so much procrastinator, but just the smooth, taking it as it comes kind of personality. And then there's the personality that can't focus on work, can't think of anything but motorcycles all week long. They know they got a race coming up. Two weeks out, they're already starting to, just can't focus on anything other than what they need to have ready, to get there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spectrum there. Some people, the amount of hours it's taken from one person might be completely different than what it's taken from another person.
Okay, I see that. Can you, on average, because I'm just thinking, you got to load a trailer, you got to drive down there. If you don't want to leave super early in the morning, you got to get a hotel. So that's really your whole Friday afternoon, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Maybe you're coming back Sunday, maybe you're not, depending on how close you live, how far away you live. Racetracks aren't always in the nicest locations. They're often far away from civilization. And then, sticking to the RMR topic of you have a down at the track, or even worse, maybe you have something else happen with your trailer on the way or your vehicle on the way, on average per week, how many hours would you say, we'll go ahead and say 48 for Saturday, Sunday of a week. So how many more hours on average are you spending focused on club racing?
So for me personally, the USBA has went back to two-day racing this year. So as you mentioned, it's a Saturday and a Sunday. Mm-hmm. There's usually a track day on Friday.
It's true. I didn't even
tie it in with that. So most people that are taking it serious are probably not going to miss that track day. So for me, I tend to get a holiday in. Shout out, Aunt Almost Diamond. I got you.
Right up there with American Express.
I'll get a holiday in Thursday night so that I don't have to drive. I'm roughly 2 hours from the track, so I don't want to get up. Usually they're checking in at by 7, so I don't want to get up and drive that morning. So I'll get a holiday in town. So I'm there Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. So it's 3 rooms per race weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
All the food, the after festivities, all that kind of stuff that obviously goes with that. So it's pretty much consuming half a day Thursday and then 3 full days.
Okay. So 72 plus 6. On average, your entire week outside of work is going to be taken up with this.
But I want to go back to one other thing on the commitment when it comes to time. And every track's probably different. I haven't raced other... I've raced other clubs, but not committed to a full season as of yet. I know that just the way the cookie crumbles, if you will, at USBA, the leadership is always telling us that they're trying to get better weekends. What's a better weekend? What does that mean? Those are the words they use. They say, if we get enough people racing, they have more power with the track ownership, and they can say they can choose the good weekends. And what I take it as, and this goes back to commitment again, we raced on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
We raced on Memorial Day. That's the two so far. There's only been 3 rounds, and 2 of them were on holiday weekends. How many racers give up time with their family and the regularly scheduled events for a club race?
You're not going to fireworks. You're not doing a barbecue. I mean, you can bring your people out to the track by all means, and please do, but, you're not doing the standard holiday items.
Yeah. But I think that's worth mentioning when you talk about time
Yeah.
commitment. because, you know, we all have wives, husbands, boyfriends, girlfriends, significant others, whatever, dogs, all those things that all have their own lives too, possibly. You know, if you're lucky enough to be, you know, racing with your significant other, then maybe that's not a problem. But I think for the vast majority of people, their family, friends are also suffering or making a commitment to club racing as well to get you there. And so going back to the very original question, as we're going through the RMRs, from a time standpoint, huge commitment to make it to every round.
Okay.
Even, we're going to get into mechanical stuff.
Yeah.
But even if everything goes smoothly.
Yeah, that's, yeah, we haven't talked about the actual mayhem part of RMR. What does RMR stand for again? Race Mayhem Recovery.
I told you we got to write that down.
But yeah, I mean, it is huge. It's nuts. I've said it before. It's crazy to me that there are this many people, and there needs to be more. We're always pushing for there to be more. So if you haven't started yet, please start club racing. But you're spending your own money to go race another guy that's spending his own money, all so that at the end of the day, you can have a sticker, you know, or yeah, they got some pretty cool medals and stuff, but you got a medal just to say like, yeah, hey, my money was better than your money this weekend,
yeah.
Which is more than that deep down. But when it really comes down to it, no one out there is getting paid to do it. And the prize pockets, we talked about that a little bit before. USBA is offering up some cash now. Some of the other clubs are offering up cash. That's awesome. But as we've also talked about, like, you know, you got two new tires back there. Tires. I seen your truck earlier with, I don't want to know how many tires in the back of it.
I just got rid of a lot.
Yeah. So that's kind of how it goes. But, yeah, so that's time. And we're not going to talk about money from a, like, actual numbers standpoint.
Well, I think we should talk about money.
We talk about money all the time. We can't talk about money tonight.
Money.
We just said American Express. So it's
American Express. It doesn't matter. No, we need to talk about money a little bit because I watch it. I'm fortunate enough that if I can find the time,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry a ton about the money for my personal club racing. But I watch other people in the paddock and I see the sacrifice that they're going through to put tires on that bike, to go out, and money is a huge part of it. John on the podcast just last week, mm-hmm. when we were talking to him, you know, and that's not the first time I'd heard that. You hear that all the time, but don't build a bike that you can't afford to race.
That was a huge tip. But, and that's, I mean, you know, you mentioned that, and how many people have you seen, not that they built a bike they couldn't afford to race, but maybe they built a bike they couldn't afford to crash, right? Which, I mean, if you break down what racing is, it's going to happen at some point. You kind of have to plan for that. But, you know, how often in club racing do people, they could be winning the championship that year and then crash the bike. They're perfectly fine, but they can't afford to get back out there because the bike's just done for.
I see it all the time. That it creeps up on you. I mean, even the USBA as an example, sorry, that's my home track, so I'm always going back to it. But even the USBA, when you read on their website, it says like, so you want to be a racer or something, and it goes through the things. And they say in there to make sure you have a good race program, a good plan. And what they mean by that, sometimes you don't really get it until you're in it. But that tire bill just keeps coming every week, depending on which bike you're racing, right? I mean, there's cheaper ways to do it, of course, but...
Yeah.
But that tire bill just keeps coming. Things happen. It's a 6-7 month period that the races are over. A lot can happen outside, you know, outside of racing, in your personal life, all those kind of things that can be a financial drain.
Well, and then also, you, not to interrupt you, sorry, but you know, you talk about building a bike that you can afford to race, but as soon as you show up with a stock bike to the track and you race, you know, you race it one weekend, someone's coming over like, oh man, have you done this yet?
Yeah.
Have you stretched your swing arm 2 inches yet? Not that you're actually don't. That was the wrong example, but you know, have you installed this? Have you done this aftermarket? Have you? And by the end of it, you know, 2 weekends later, everyone wants to be spending another $80,000 on your bike.
Sorry, I'm thinking about John again. I mean, extending the swing arm and putting our Shinko slicks on there so that we can go race.
Race, twisty race. Yeah, it's nuts. I actually talked to a guy who was racing a RC390. He was just at the track day, but he had his numbers on there, and I was like, how do you like it? Because I've been looking at kind of maybe getting one, heading that direction one day. We'll see. But he's like, you know, being on the slower bike, the smaller bike, the less power, all those things are great. Everyone tells you like how much more you'll learn. That's all true, but I never felt like I didn't do that on the bigger bike. He's like, this set of tires has done 4 track days and 2 races. I was like, what? He's like, yep. So I'm not switching back anytime soon. So if you're looking to do it on a budget, you know, not only will the small bikes help you ride better and all those other great things that coaches put out there, which is probably true. We don't necessarily test it here, but we'll get there one day.
But you know what a small bike doesn't do?
Yeah, 0 to 16 under 3 seconds.
Besides go fast. Can we go to the last R?
Recovery, yeah.
So this poor girl went down last round. The other costs that people don't really, until you're in it, you don't really understand is if you're taking it serious and you put that bike down on the track day before, we got to get that bike back out on track. What does that require? An extra of everything. You got to, I mean, honestly, and maybe you never use 96% of that stuff.
But you need to have extra pegs, extra levers, lever ends, bar ends, lever guards, your bars themselves. You know, these are stock clip-ons. I did just put out a clip-on video where I kind of talk about that a little bit, but your aftermarket clip-ons have extra bars. So if you're not running aftermarket, you need extra clip-ons, which at that point you might as well put them on and just get the extra bars. What else is a major... I'd say those are just the like, okay, these things are going to break, period, or at least have some scrapes on them.
Brake pads. I mean, how many times have I seen somebody racing without a windscreen because they snapped one off in the race before and they're trying to go again? And, you know, I told, you know, as a former Harley rider.
Oh, boy.
I still ride in the Harleys, for the record. But
what?
I thought that was your mad face.
No.
Mr. Potato Head.
We've talked about Harley's being good. I'm good.
Well, one of the things I always tell people is if you're getting ready to go on a long Harley ride, you want the bike to look fresh. So you clean it up, you make it, you spit shine it, it's perfect. You know, you get your favorite t-shirt on and your favorite riding jacket and your favorite helmet, whatever it is, right? And everything's clean and everything's polished and you take off on the road. You get 500, 1,000 miles down the road, you don't care how many bugs are on the bike anymore. You don't care if your shirt fell off, if somebody thinks you look cool or not, it just doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. I would compare that to a race day. When you show up to the race, I want my bike to be clean. I want it to be fresh. I want the rubber marks, you know, cleaned off of it and all that kind of stuff. After that first race, it's just a matter of trying to make it through the day. It doesn't matter. It don't matter what you look like anymore. It's just, let's go try to win a race.
See the fingerprints and the dust and the rubber. You know, I just noticed today I was actually pulling some tape off the back of this bike. And there's little bits of rubber stuck up in the fairings. I was like, yeah.
That'll slow you down, man. That's weight.
Yeah, yeah. Weight saving. That's why you get faster throughout the race, actually. It's not it's not about losing grip in the tire. You got to think about it the other way, where as your tire wears off, you're losing weight and you should get faster. So try and burn through your tires as fast as possible.
I don't know if that's true. You said we would only tell truth on here.
Okay, yeah, that's not true. That was a terrible rider tip. But speaking of rider tips, you know, we did kind of forget one. We didn't actually forget it, but I think this is a great time to stick it in. What do you think?
Hit it.
Good? All right. And this week's rider tip does come to you once again from Bittinger Motorsports, which is building solid riders through vision-based training. And it's actually a guest tip this week, which is awesome. This is from Jose Cruz, which is a Bittinger Motorsports coach and a CMRA racer. It's another one of us. I say us, I don't race yet. I got that. Anyway, here we go. Here's his tip for the week. Get your head right before you grid out. You have to be 100% focused on your race and what you need to do. Take time to think about what you need to do to win that race or beat that lap time before you ever go out. Stay focused no matter what and never, never, ever check your bank account before a race, which I do think goes kind of right on par with what we've been talking about. It's an interesting kind of segue though, you know, almost different direction of, we're talking about all the things you need to be worried about, and that tip's great for bringing you back in. Like, hey, when you are about to race, when you're about to grid up, you're in the pits pulling your tire warmers off, you know, Josh Bittinger, we'd appreciate your tips so much. I think the first one ever was mantra, right? Have a mantra, have basically a system. I mean, it's a mantra, but have a system of what you do right before you go out. And once you figure out what that is, don't change it. Is you need to have a set, this is what I do. And I guess part of that could be this tip, basically, is clearing your head, whether you need to think about the nice blue sunny day, which you shouldn't, but, you know, get focused, say, hey, this is my goal, walk through, my head's going back to a, you know, bobsled racers. You ever see the movie Cool Runnings?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's sitting there in the hotel room going through pictures because he's the driver. And everyone else is out at the bar partying, whatever. Well, you're the driver. It's just you. You don't have a team. And if your team is, like, mechanics behind you, they can be out partying. But right before that race starts, you know, have that mental focus. Get in the game. Make that part of your mantra. Reset and don't check your bank account.
Who was the tip from again?
Jose Cruz, a fellow Bittinger Motorsports coach and CMRA racer.
Thank you. That's a good tip.
So yeah, we appreciate that. And as always, Bittinger Motorsports, we appreciate your tips. Keep them coming. And we hope you guys as the audience like them. Go check them out. Down at, we got a link down in the description, BittingerMotorsports.com. They ride down at MSRH. There's a lot of private coaching down there. He's got the membership there, so he can kind of hook you up whenever. He does mini moto stuff, a bunch of cross training type of stuff. Then he gets you out on the actual track. And we can't not talk about the air conditioned classroom, the mobile air conditioned classroom, which is sweet. So go hit him up for all your racing needs. If you're liking the tips, mention it when you get there. Let him know, like, hey, these tips have been helping. Or, you know, we on this channel, on the podcast, I think we're believers of constructive criticism. We'll take it positive, negative, whatever it is, and move on with it. So if you got something bad to say, go ahead and say it.
He will. I might not. So
anyway, unless it's cold.
I would also, going along with that tip, that just made me think, I hate Fridays. I hate track day Fridays.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to focus up, mm-hmm. and Saturday and Sunday, business is closed, and I can move on and deal with it. But I'm usually sloughing work on a Friday.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
I can't really leave the phone. And I know more than once, stupidly, going completely against what Jose said, I'm on a Teams meeting, hoping they'll hurry up so I can hang up real quick because I'm jumping on a bike because my next session's coming up.
So that is on a track day, at least, yeah. Right? And I will say that's, you know, kind of taking us back to the commitment thing too, though, is that if you're going to do that track day,
you're missing a day of work, yeah. Potentially.
Yeah, you could be missing a day of work, depending on what your job is. You know, if you are a lucky person that can work from home, it seems lucky on the outside. Grass is always greener because it means that you get to take your work to the track with you sometimes, which, you know, from your experience, maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe you do wish you could just say, hey, I'm taking Friday off, and then forget it. Don't check the bank account and just focus. Earlier, we were talking about all that. I didn't even register that. Yeah, no, you get to take Friday off, too.
Yep.
You know, you get Saturday, Sunday off normally. You got to take Friday off. Well, it's nuts. The RMR, recovery. We were talking about recovery, though, before we got interrupted by the tip. Not interrupted, but before we took the break for the tip.
I mean, honestly, that's just talking about me and my personal experiences. But how many people in the paddock, sticking with USBA even, now that they went back to two-day racing, the whole goal of two-day racing is to make it worth people traveling.
Yeah.
So those people are traveling. They're probably taking a Thursday, maybe a Wednesday.
Yeah.
To get to the track. For their Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then they're driving home on a Monday.
More hotels and...
Club racing weekend is a lot bigger commitment than you think when you start
digging in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you want to be competitive. I will say the nice part about club racing, in my opinion, is that it isn't your job, and it isn't the most important thing in the world. And I don't want to take away from it because it's awesome and we love it and that's what this podcast is all about. But at the end of the day, you know, if you have a family emergency come up or you can't miss any more days of work or your bike went down and you can't fix it, there's nothing you can do, you're not going to get fired because you don't make it to a club race. You're not going to lose out. And I think that's one of the cool things too is like not just not fired, but you're not going to lose your ride, right? It's your ride. You built it. You built that. You ride it. You pay for it. You manage it. You're the team. You're the person. And so, you know, if last round you put your bike down, you can't come back for this season, sweet. Make that decision. Be smart about it. Move forward and say, well, next season we're going to come back. We'll be good to go. And I'll look at what happened this season and I can budget better moving forward. I'm not going to lose my ride unless, you know, your significant other or your dog says, hey, no, I need more dog food. I don't know. Need more treats, man. What happened to them? The milk bones are gone. But anyway, I think that's kind of a cool, unique part of it is that, you know, it sucks you're not making money, but at the same time, there isn't necessarily the super commitment as much as there is if you're hired by a team to race. And you can also, like, no one's going to fault you, honestly. You know, if you had a buddy that you were racing with and he put his bike down and he just couldn't do it, but he came out to every race after that and still supported the club, do you think any less of that guy, really?
No.
right? So no one's going to fault you for it. You're not going to be, you know, clubs are, we talk about how much of a family aspect there is in club racing and motorcycle racing in general.
Paddock's not going to. It's probably going to be your closest friend, co-racers that are going to be riding you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, get it there.
They'll be trying. But also, I'd say they're the first people to be, you know, you go down and before you even get back, your bike's half put back together. And they're just like, oh, we borrowed sprocket from Bob and handlebar from Billy. And Jake's over grabbing, I don't know what, but he's grabbing something. Oh, he got a new bike for you.
I think I said it last week, but shout out to the boys when this one went down at the last race. Because I was told to get out of the way. And then I was in the trailer getting my leathers off, and every once in a while I hear, handlebar, grip, switches.
Bike slowly coming back together. That's good.
Where the hell's the wrench?
Oh, the race mayhem recovery. You know, but that is the best part is that I think, and it goes anywhere, but you never want to see someone fail, right? And so even if you're racing against the guy, like if you're battling with a guy for first, and you're about to overtake him, I feel like you're the first person that's gonna be down there like, get your freaking bike working, I'm gonna take you. And I'm not doing this, right? I'm not cheating, right? So you're there helping that guy. There's no hostility in that way where you're...
No, I agree. We've had, you know, watching it go this year, there's been some people that have missed rounds for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they were maybe my top competition. And that's unfortunate. And like, I want those people to be there. Win or lose, I want those people to be there.
Yeah, you
want to
earn it, right? You can't just get it's not a participation trophy. If your competition's not there, you don't feel like you're earning it like you should.
Yeah, but there's other ways to look at that too. We talk about the commitment. Now, I'm just giving the other side of the picture because I'm that guy. I want everybody to be there.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is, if you're there every week, you're racing every week, we just talked about what a commitment that is.
I mean, that's part of are you trying to get at the fact that that's part of earning it?
That's part of earning it.
Yeah. No, I have thought about that a lot too, which, you know, is the fact that it goes back to, you know, John Hutchinson saying last week, don't build a bike that you can't afford to race. It's great to not have the commitment, but at the same time, like, if you take a guy that's fast and a guy that's not quite as fast, but a guy that's fast can't actually afford to do every round, then when it comes to club racing, who is actually the better all-around club racer? This guy might be faster on a motorcycle, but I've got every trip planned out. I've got it all budgeted. I know exactly how much money I need for tires. I've got all this backup stuff ready to go. I've got a backup bike if I need it, and I planned all this stuff out. And, you know, at a club racing level, it's definitely something to take into perspective and kind of think about is that because you are the team, you are all of it.
Right.
There is that other side of it, you know, and that's kind of what we're here talking about today, I guess.
RMR. Can we put that somewhere? RMR.
Straight up, it would be this way.
Editor.
Because they're reading it. RMR. Race, mayhem, recovery.
I like it.
Is
that enough for RMR?
It can be, I think.
Can we talk about what an extreme bad mother Top Rack is? Because I got to mention it just for a second last week because we didn't have time because we had such a great guest on.
Yeah, we can absolutely talk about Top Rack and BMW. And
it doesn't have to be about BMW. I'm not crediting.
We know you want to talk about BMW.
I love BMW.
That's all he wants to talk about.
Case in point.
These aren't the only two BMWs here. I've seen another one over there. I'm pretty sure there's probably two more in the garage somewhere. There's more. There's BMWs everywhere.
The thing is, hindsight is 2020, they say, right?
Hindsight is BMW.
If we look at the beginning of the World Superbike season, I think you asked me once even on here, you said, do you think Top Rack can really win a race on a BMW? And that was coming from you, but I mean the announcers, the experts were all saying, you know, he ought to be able to put that bike on the podium a couple times this year. It's going to take a year to figure it out.
He's got to figure the bike out. BMW's got to figure him out. All the other bikes are so competitive. They've got the riders that have been there forever. Top Rack's good, but do we know if he's that good?
Do you realize he just won his 10th in a row? 10 races in a row on a BMW. I am not giving the credit to the bike. I'll give some of the credit to the bike. The bike's fine, but again, we've said it here and I'm gonna say it again. There's four bikes on that grid. Shout out Garrett. Garrett had a good week for him. He's been struggling this year, but there's four bikes. They're like 13th, 14th, 18th, 16th. That's just normal. Top Rack is winning these races now by, it'd be 10 seconds, but he's trying to do some Mark Marquez copy swim act or wheeling across the line or double stopping across the line.
Classic Top Rack fashion.
Yeah, he is winning these things by extreme margins.
Very large. It is kind of scary. And as you mentioned last week, he did come out and officially say he is sticking with BMW. So he's hunting for a MotoGP ride, but I guess not.
I think the ones that he would have taken are
already gone.
Are not taking him, so.
Not quite worth trying to ride a Honda at the moment.
I still maintain my original plan. What I want to happen, of course, being the BMW guy.
But is he too old?
It doesn't matter, because.
Okay.
What I want to happen is for him to stick with BMW and World Superbike, help them develop the MotoGP bike. He might not be the guy that goes to MotoGP and wins everything because he might be too old or whatever, but the guy can still help him develop a bike, get him ahead, and eventually spend the last year or two in MotoGP on a BMW and then go into the sunset as a rich, happy Turkish racer.
That would be good. You know, it brings up an interesting, in my head, I was like, well, why wouldn't he go for MotoGP right now and then feed news back to BMW, which I don't know if that's allowed.
Contract.
I don't know if he could do that. Contracts say you can't share secrets and whatever else. And I was like, well, he could be a BMW test rider. And then I was like, wait a second. And I just realized how little I know about the behind-the-scenes world of MotoGP. And we've dug into a little bit of, you know, the not-fun stuff of how much it boils down to money and then everything else. But what are we going to see from BMW? You know, what rumors do you have, if any, of what we'll see from BMW over the next couple of years before they join? Or is it just going to be a continuation of building up that World Superbike and learning?
So I think Petrucci was quoted as saying he thinks that World Superbikes need to be more closer to stock bikes. He says, sure, they say they're racing whatever, but I don't remember. He put a percentage on it, but don't quote me. It's like 50% prototype, 50% street bike. World Superbikes. He said they should be closer to stock, and then he started making comments about BMW's bike not being
anywhere near
a street bike, and Ducati being kind of at the end of their model. Like, there should be something new coming out pretty soon, so there's going to be some changes from those quote-unquote top two currently, and I don't know, everybody else just needs to catch up. I mean, BMW's had bad news, too. Did you see Bonovo's gone?
I did not see that. Big sponsor.
Their satellite team.
Yeah.
Yeah, the monkey thing.
Yeah.
The monkey thing. But no.
I have to go back and rewatch all of our episodes because I don't remember which one it was. But
so basically Bonovo, the way I understand it, they were getting a little frisky with the BMW factory boys. They were saying, we need these parts, we need that parts. And BMW basically came and smacked them, put them in their place and said, no, you're a customer.
Right.
You drive the bikes that you buy from us.
Yeah.
And Bonovo didn't think that was the partnership that they wanted to be in. There's some fighting going on behind the scenes, of course. And Bonovo announced they're gone. They still want to be in World Superbike, but they're shopping other teams. There's been a lot of Ducati rumors, but there's also been some Kawasaki rumors. What that does to Garrett Gerloff, I don't know, but I know that Redding has one more year with BMW, and they've already signed Vandermark and Top Rack to next year. So I don't know if contract says he can be a test rider. Maybe somebody else will want to run BMWs next year, a completely new team.
Yeah.
BMW has said they're open to that, but right now we only have the factory team for next year on a BMW.
No more of the Bonovos.
Batista is trying to decide whether he wants to come back or not next year. And that's been, he's the Brett Favre of World Superbike. He can't ever decide to retire. And even when he does, I think he'll come back. But you have Petrucci fighting for that job. You have Iannone's fighting for that job. There's a bunch of people that want Bautista's seat. But Ducati really can't make a decision until they know if he's coming back or not. But he is down by 100 points to Toprak at the midpoint of the season. And getting beat by 40 points by his teammate, Bulega. So World Superbike has been, that's the point I would make. We watch all these Ducatis in MotoGP and nobody can keep up. Nobody can do nothing.
Yep, absolutely.
World Superbike had 2 years with Bautista just destroying everyone. What a difference a year makes. We don't know what's going to happen next year.
Yeah.
Yamaha might figure it out. They might destroy everybody next year. I don't think so. My gut says Ducati's going to be there for till 2007. But, what a difference a year makes. I mean, now all of a sudden the BMW is a good bike. Nobody want to ride that bike.
Yeah, it is. I think that'll be the most interesting thing. It's kind of, I don't know. Is the BMW actually good? Because you look, I would almost compare Toprak to, it's going to be terrible. I hate to bring him up, but here we go. Mark Marquez.
Yes.
In just one small aspect where you're talking about, like, no one wanted to ride the BMW. No one wants to ride the Honda. But if you look at last year with Mark on the Honda, one could argue he was doing okay compared to what we saw from everyone else.
When he was on track, he was doing things that 50-60% of the grid would slit their throats for those kind of finishes.
Yeah, you know, that's why I make that comparison. It's so hard, and the rider is a lot of it. You know, it's like what I think, again, to bring him up, John Hutchinson said last week about, you know, F1 is 98% the bike or the car, and MotoGP is 98% the rider. Those are numbers that I just made up. I don't remember exactly what it was. I think it was 90-10. But it's true, and you get someone like Toprak in there. Is the bike actually better this year also?
Or is it just him, but with him being able to ride it, is that going to bring other people in years to come?
Yeah, I think he makes the bike look great. I'm sure there's been improvements. They've been working hard. Maybe they just didn't have the right riders, because I got to believe, not because it's a BMW, just any of the riders, Gerloff, any of them. Man, they're blowing those Yamahas down on the straight. I mean, they're blowing them down. I mean, you've seen it at this last race over and over again. If the guys are willing to, you know, brake late,
yeah.
I mean, they'd come onto the straight. They'd come onto the straight and be 4 or 5 bike lengths back, and they'd be spooling up. By the end of that straight, they were alongside of them and passing them. If they just hold off on the brakes a little bit, they'd make the pass every time.
BMW's got the power.
And Toprak, he's just a character. He'd be fun in MotoGP,
uh-huh.
Just because of the character that he brings. He cracks me up. I mean, they always have little sound bites of him, like, walking past Bautista, and Bautista will be telling him, like, you need to slow down, and he'll say, not anymore, buddy, or, you know, there's just little nips back and forth all the time.
Yeah, keeps the grid lively, like it should be.
And he's always, I mean, he's wearing a damn mustache on... Put a fake mustache on for some reason. I didn't look into that.
That's good. That is one sweet thing I think about just motorcycle racing in general is that it is still kind of, it's professional, 100%, but it's like one step below super professional, right? Like the riders do have personalities. You can get to know those. You know, like Acosta last year, where there's Acosta pizza
right.
And whatnot. It's fun. It's cool. It's great to watch. World Superbike, crazy season. I don't think at the beginning of the year, I mean, obviously we just admitted it. We weren't talking about Toprak taking it like this.
No.
No one was. And here he is, gone. But we are halfway through. Halfway through, things start to change.
Shout out. It was good to see, you know, I was going to say local hero, but home country hero.
Yeah, local to the U.S.
Local to the U.S. Gillum got a shot to go and ride a Honda. It was a rough proposition, riding a bike you've never rode on a track you've never rode.
People you've never ridden with.
He kept it up. He went around the track. Position was nothing to write home about, but...
There were some people that didn't keep it up.
There were people
that hadn't ridden those bikes and had been at those tracks and hadn't ridden with those people before. So, you know?
Yeah, but good job. Hopefully he gets another opportunity to do that. It's neat to see.
Yeah, it's cool to see other parts of the world reaching out to Americans because it's rare, and I feel like we're kind of slowly starting to get back there. We used to be, way back when, I hear all the stories of before I watched, you know, America was the top of everything, and we've come away from that by doing all this stuff on our home soil, like NASCAR and football, that we don't care about. But it's nice to see us all come back. You know that, I can't talk about that. I'll have to tell you about that later. We can't talk about F1 here.
Yeah, no more F1. Yep. How come you don't let me have a motocross corner and you talk about F1 every damn week?
I just said no. I just said we're not going to do
it. Yeah, but now you got me talking about it.
Anyway,
so what are we doing here? This episode's going to come out, and we're still going to be a week away from racing.
We will be a week away. Almost a week and a half. Yeah.
How long are you going to be here?
I'll be here for a minute. We got some other stuff. I don't make a trip across country just to ride motorcycles, despite what y'all might think. That being said, I will not make a trip across country without riding motorcycles. So
that's fair.
There are some other things I have to do. Part of that's getting both of these bikes ready for the weekend. I don't know. Cole's bikes are just always in perfect condition, mint, ready to go. No problems.
Comes back to those hours invested.
Yep, the RMR.
The RMR hours start Sunday afternoon on the way home from the track.
Yeah, that is the first part of the recovery on the way home. Some of those drives, and I haven't even done a race weekend yet, so I can't even imagine, but driving back from a track day, your eyes are just like, you're going on muscle memory, 100%, right? Like, if you didn't know the way home, it'd be, man, it gets rough.
Hey, I was driving through the canyon yesterday. Mm-hmm. Local canyon, twisty roads, in a car, in a cage.
Yeah.
I was driving through the canyon.
Drove my cage to work today.
Drove my cage to work, and I was talking to my significant other, and I was talking about the race, and I was saying, I got to do this instead of this, and she's like, what do you mean by that? And so I started like, well, instead of rounding the corners, I'm driving it like 1,000. And she's like, what the hell is that even supposed to mean? And I said, like this. And so I just hang straight on a corner and then crank it. Wham! I like straighten out these corners. That's what I'm doing.
You know, we took two different canyons, but I was also driving through a canyon earlier today, albeit not in a car, still in a cage, but a very large cage, yeah. the rolling stable, if you will. And there was this corner, and I come up to it, and you can see it looked like a perfect chicane. And the lanes just did this, and I was like, looking at my mirrors, I'm like, there's no one back there, there's no one in front of me, and I had to remind myself that I almost did, and I was like, man, it's, you know, so in a motorhome, you pay real good attention to all those signs that say, like, hey, take this corner of 50 or you'll tip over, because you're very top heavy, and so I was paying attention to those signs, and I was doing that, and I was like, well, if you took the stupid freaking two lanes out of here, just made a one big long chicane, I could just cut straight, I could do 75 through here.
Right.
I think out loud, I said, don't take the race line, and, you know, my wife just looked over at me like, what? I was like, no, don't worry about it. We will not be doing any race lines.
Don't worry about
it,
y'all just almost died.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, and then I did think about riding the bike through that canyon, and then I came right back to the same conversation we always have, which is just, if you're a canyon chaser, get yourself to the track. Prove that you have what it takes. We've seen people do it. You know, Anthony being one of those examples, 100%. You said you came from the canyons, and someone said you should race, and you started racing. Obviously, you've gone on to do great things. We're not saying it can't be done, but on the opposite side, I've had plenty of friends that have big talk, and then they show up to a track, and it's gone. I was one of those people, 100%. You know, my first track day, I'm out there thinking I was close to dragging knee, got my pictures back, and I'm 3 feet away. It's a good time. But anyway, speaking of having bikes to put together or get ready, having some mental focus to get done, maybe some bank accounts to check since we're not at the track yet. I love that part of the tip. Don't check your bank account. Jose Cruz, if you're listening, when can I check my bank account? When should I? Do I wait till Monday or do I wait till like the following weekend?
I wouldn't check it till Monday morning because that's when I have my wife ordering parts.
Okay, so right before you order everything.
Yeah, she makes me drive home from the track, you know, like I didn't do enough all day. Then I got to drive the truck, and I have to say, get one of them coming. We're going to need one of those.
Put this in the cart.
Yeah, grab four more of
those. What's the cart at? 6,000.
Don't tell me that. Just hit by now.
There we go. So anyway, get your carts loaded up. Get ready for your race weekend. We're going to go do the same thing. We thank you guys for listening, as always, and thanks for being with us here this weekend. At the compound, I think next weekend you'll see similar, and then we should see a weekend at a racetrack. So we'll have a couple of different venues coming up.
Yeah, and if you're local or not too far away, come on out to USBA and say hi to us.
Yeah, come say hi. We got some stickers. We'll have a big old JK Moto flag and a big old pit area. Come say hi to us. And not just us, but some of the guests that have been on the podcast will definitely be there hanging out. Shout out Lugnut. So come say hi to everyone. We'll be there. And also, there are businesses for motorcycling that come out and support the racing. And you can come out and support those businesses also and show them that it's worth their time. I mean, as we've just talked about, the RMR lease is spending plenty of money, and I'm sure those businesses get plenty of that. But it never hurts to see someone else come out, and you can talk to them and seeing them in person in that kind of fashion, I think it's something that's cool and unique, and you only see that at the racetrack. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Street Riders, a great place to come out and meet everybody that works on sport bikes in the state.
Just far and few between. Man. Few and far between.
That's where they're going to be, though. Yep. They'll be set up shop there. It's a good place to meet them. Good place to talk about future projects, future things.
Yep.
And it's a good time. And it's free.
And you can watch racing.
And you can bring in your own water.
And go faster, because you're drinking it.
All right. On that note, thanks for listening.
See you next week.